Right, Burst Baw is back, rather reluctantly from my point of view, but after a week off of not having to think about Celtic and just Scottish football in general, we have returned. I'm Hamish, and we've got a couple of Rangers fans. I don't know why you two have been allowed in the same podcast. I don't know what the hell is going on. Maybe it's just a lack of numbers, but we do have Craig. Hello, Craig.
How are we doing, Hamish?
Yeah, I've already answered that, mate. And Callum, how are you?
I'm not bad, thank you. I've had a wee bit of a sabbatical from the pod due to one reason or another, but it's good to be back, especially when my team's in such fine form. So delighted to be here, as Casey always says.
Fine fettle Rangers are in, aren't they? Shall we just start by chatting about your win last night over Hibernian? Didn't see the game. I heard it was kind of a bit of a scrappy game, but relatively straightforward in the end, Callum?
I would say so. I think scrappy is right. The first half in particular was a bit, I don't know how Craig felt, but it was a bit of a slog to watch, to be honest, which kind of probably comes across a bit spoiled given the position that we're in. But yeah, it wasn't great. The park didn't really lend itself to the best games of football. But I think it's a weird thing this season when Rangers seem to get the one goal. The game seems to be won from our point of view, and we seem to know how to see games out with kind of slender leads, which absolutely wouldn't have happened really since Walter Smith was manager, to be honest. So yeah, I mean, just another win after a really kind of test in January from a Rangers point of view in terms of the games that we've had, but we've came out of it only dropping obviously the couple of points to Motherwell the other week. So as I say, really can't complain. Wasn't the greatest game, but I will take 1-0 wins in terrible games all the way to May at this point.
Is it 8 wins now you need? Have you been counting that out?
I think that was the 8. So last night was number 8 and we need 7, I think.
Good.
But my maths, as my teachers from school will tell you, is not my strongest point. So somebody may correct me on that.
It's weird because I was looking at the league table and Rangers are in the 70-point threshold and 72 points, right? Celtic are still in the 40s. And I don't know why I'm laughing about that, but that just sums up. I mean, Rangers are away in the 70s, Celtic are still in the 40s, and Rangers have only got 12 games left. I was watching, just completely bored during the day, and Sky Sports, you know how they show these just old games that are on all the time, and they were showing a championship game between Middlesbrough and Brighton from a few years ago, and Conor Goldson was playing for Brighton, and he was all over the place in the game. He was absolutely awful. I think it was for 2016 or 2017, so Rangers would have signed him maybe a year after that. And he just seems to have kind of summed up the change in Rangers from previous seasons to this season, because I don't know how he played against Hibs, but he just seems like such an assured player. Like, he's leading that Rangers backline now, and he's certainly a player that, as I say, Craig, kind of symbolises the improvement in Rangers this season.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely bang on, Hamish. I'd say him and Tavernier kind of, as you say, pretty much epitomise the almost the evolution of this Rangers team under Gerrard. I mean, you kind of think about over the course of this season, I know Fisher mentioned it was the whole of January was kind of a test, that because of our own form in the last two Januaries that have preceded this season, it was always going to be a test. And then obviously with the run of fixtures that we had, but even over the course of the season, the little kind of tests that we've overcome, like when you think about going to Rugby Park and getting that 1-0 win over the line, obviously we've tripped up before, up to Pittodrie and winning Easter Road and winning. I know we did drop points against Motherwell, but even in over the kind of course of that game, that was kind of, we were 1-0 down with 20 minutes to go, and last season when we were at that stage, would you think Rangers would even get a draw out of the game? So in a way, that was almost, although we didn't come on to win the game, a kind of sign of the shift in mentality at the club. And I think, as you say, Goldson has been absolutely huge for us. And I think the fact that you see the other centre-back, we've kind of rotated a good bit this season between Hollander and in Balogun. But Goldson's been a kind of permanent figure in there, along with Tavernier and obviously Barisic. And in defence, is like 20 clean sheets this season. In the league is outrageous, isn't it? So yeah, I think you're spot on. I think you look at the kind of key players of this season, and I think Goldson's right up there alongside, as I say, Tavernier for player of the season, definitely.
Yeah, just for the outside looking in, just seems really kind of straightforward for Rangers this season, and I wouldn't be massively surprised if Rangers went the whole season undefeated. I think probably that, obviously, the two games against us will probably still be the toughest games, even though we're, you know, pretty diabolical state at the moment. And maybe the other potential thing that could, you know, come in the way of Rangers going unbeaten is if you do, or when you do win the league pretty early, if the players slacking off, party a bit too much. But I suppose we're in the midst of a lockdown. Without being facetious, it's not as if they can really go out on the town or whatever. And I suppose if Rangers haven't lost a league game at that point, that will be a motivation to keep going. Like the Celtic Invincibles never slacked off at all after we won the league a couple of years ago. Do you guys think that's a very real possibility now with, what, 12 games to go?
Well, we've still got to go to the away to the juggernaut that is Livingston at the start of March. So, need to be wary about that. I don't know. I would have expected us to have lost a game by now, but I'm still trying to come round to the fact that we're probably going to win the league. So give me another couple of months, probably until the start of next season, and I'll make a confident prediction whether we finish this season unbeaten. I mean, it just depends. I mean, our off days so far this season, fortunately, have still been good enough to get the job done. So it really just depends, I guess, not to depress even more, Hamish, maybe what happens between now and the next Old Firm game, whether, you know, Celtic are fired up to not lose potentially the title at Parkhead as well. So there's a lot of variables in there. I think after the last decade, I'll take us winning the league, and then the players can play the last however many games drunk if they want, because I'll not be caring.
So what are you saying? 7 wins, say, you've got 5 league games coming up, and then the 6th one is at Parkhead. So assuming by that logic, if you were to win 6 and we were to maybe draw or lose one of our games, which is, you know, at least a certainty, it could be that game at Parkhead, which is just pretty typical.
It's definitely been kind of mentioned on Twitter and stuff like that, that we could win the league at Parkhead. I don't know if Craig knows the particulars that would allow us to win it at Parkhead, but
I think if and I've just seen this mentioned on Twitter, I think if Celtic were to drop 4 more points, we could beat them at Parkhead and win the league.
My word. Right, we'll turn attention to Livingston then, and the other form team in the country, really the only two form teams in the country, really, in terms of teams that are actually playing at the moment. They are amazing run under David Martindale, just keeps going. I'm on the Flash Score app, and you know when you go to a team and you look at their recent games, and I'm literally having to scroll my finger down onto like the next set of results before I see a game that they've lost. It was St Mirren at home all the way back in the middle of November. Since then, they've played 12 games. They've won 10 of them. They've drawn 2 against us. So they're not even as poor as we've been. It's still 2 draws against Celtic, and they could have won either of those. It's just a totally remarkable run of form. They're into a cup final where they'll have, let's face it, they'll be favourites for the cup final against St Johnstone on the 28th of February. They've got a doubleheader against Aberdeen coming up. They've got, you know, games against Hamilton and Dundee United and St Johnstone again coming up that are very winnable in the league. Where is the limit for this Livingston team, Craig?
Well, I mean, they'll be fancying themselves going into every single game just now, and quite right. I remember when we were talking about it before, when Martindale came in, and we were thinking they had the first couple of games that had went well. I think one of them was in the League Cup, and we were saying kind of would top six maybe be a wee bit of a stretch, but certainly they, you would think they would be safe. But now that's pretty much, top six is pretty much safe. And you'll have Aberdeen and Hibs looking over their shoulder without a doubt, because neither of the two teams seem to be able to put together any sort of run, never mind the sort of run that Livy are on just now. That St Mirren game as well, that was the one that Gary Holt would come out after, wasn't it, and said, like, oh, this is maybe the kind of time when you just need to ask yourself if you're the right man for the job. And obviously Martindale's kind of finally stepped into the hot seat. They'll take even more of a confidence booster from him getting the right decision of passing his fit and proper test, person test, whatever that even means. And yeah, I mean, I know, I think we're going to probably come on to it now, but if you're looking at Livingston's season, if they were to kind of get a European place and go on and win the League Cup, then I think he's got a very strong case for Manager of the Year, and what a season that would be for them. If the Livingston fans would probably be not really dreaming for much better than what they've had since they've came back up, but this would certainly go beyond even their kind of wildest dreams, I would imagine.
Well, they're 8 points behind Aberdeen at the moment with the same amount of games played. They're five behind Hibs, and they've got a game in hand in Hibs. They play Aberdeen home and away in their next two matches. Now, if they were to win those two games, they'd just be 2 points behind Aberdeen with, you know, so many games to go. It's not inconceivable that Livingston could win a cup and finish, you know, best of the rest, finish third in the Scottish Premiership. I mean, you consider that the top five teams will get a place in Europe next year. You know, if the Scottish Cup's played, it will be the top four and the Scottish Cup winner. But obviously there's always complications over whether the Scottish Cup winner, if they've already qualified through the league, which is a fair chance of being the case, it would go to the top five. But you could be living in a place here where Livingston are in the Europa League next year, because I believe that third place would get the Europa League, whereas fourth and fifth would go into the new Conference League. So it's just, it's a crazy, crazy place that we're in at the moment with regards to Livingston. You kind of preempted there, Craig, the question we got in, and it's a real hypothetical question, but we love questions like that. We got it in from ARDM on Twitter. What would be more impressive, Rangers going the whole campaign unbeaten or Livingston finishing in a European spot and winning the League Cup? Essentially, who would get Manager of the Year if it panned out that way, Gerrard or Martindale? Fisher, what's your thoughts?
I mean, obviously the season that Rangers are having is absolutely incredible, and if we do go on to win the league unbeaten, then that's a phenomenal achievement. In saying that, though, the job that Livingston were doing, I think at the start of the season, if you go back and listen to the podcast when we spoke about Livingston, we always realised that they had a better team than what they were doing. And obviously Martindale's came in, and the run of form, as we've spoken about, has been absolutely unbelievable. I think for a club like Livingston, and that maybe sounds a bit patronising, so I don't mean it like that, but they've only came up a couple of years ago, where you've had obviously Aberdeen there in kind of second, third position pretty consistently for the best part of a decade. So being able to go in this run of form, to pip a team like Aberdeen and a team like Hibs as well, you know, whatever the people's opinions may be in them, they're still a very good team, and a team that a lot of people maybe actually thought would be kind of clear favourites for third. So if they pip both of them to third place and win a League Cup on top of that, for me, I mean, as you know, I love Steven Gerrard and stuff like that, but it would have to be Martindale for me. I just think the job, for that to be the case come the end of the season, given where they were in November, is just, I don't think, somebody again might correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember a manager having this kind of impact at a team out with Rangers or Celtic ever, like in my lifetime watching Scottish football.
Well, they're in an amazing place. SPL Stats tweeted last night that only three managers in the entire history of Scottish football have had a better start to their career at a league club than David Martindale. Now, this is, I think, all competitions. So Brendan Rodgers is out of it, for example, but Martin O'Neill won his first 12 I believe Bill Struth from 1920 won 11 and drew one of his first 12. You've got Dave Shaw from Aberdeen in the 1950s, Willie Maley at Celtic, William Wilton at Rangers, Davy Hay at Celtic. And their number six is the name David Martindale, not with Celtic, not with Rangers, not even with Aberdeen, but with Livingston. And his record, as I said, 12 games, 1-10, drawn 2. And the thing is that, you know, that could continue the way Livingston are playing. It's a remarkable record. However, Craig, it is manager of the season we'd be talking about. Does the fact that Steven Gerrard's been there the whole season mean that he'd be a better choice to be it? Or could you look at it conversely and say that David Martindale came into a team that was struggling and has just turned their fortunes around?
Yeah, that kind of adds in another kind of element to it. I mean, I've got to say, if Rangers were to go the full season unbeaten and win the league, even without the unbeaten part, I think winning the league this season, given the magnitude of it, I know enough has been said about Celtic and all their troubles. Nearly burst into song there. but I think Rangers winning the league this year and how well we've played up until this point, Gerrard is certainly the front runner. If we were to go unbeaten, then as good as what we're saying that a season it would be for Livingston and Martindale, I would still maybe, obviously with the blue-tinted specs on edge towards giving it to Gerrard, but I would then say as well, if Martindale was to get it, I wouldn't be too upset about it, because it would be, I think the fact that the kind of how Livingston's season had been going up until the point when Holt obviously stepped down.
You're in a relegation battle.
Exactly, and we were really talking about maybe the Livingston kind of bubble would burst a little bit, and they really were, like, some of the results were really, really poor. And yeah, so I think that would even, I know, get what you're meaning, but I think that on the kind of flip side of it, the fact that he's actually came in and turned it round that much would be kind of even more of a reason to back up his case as manager of the year. But as I say, I would still say Gerrard, going back to the original question on Twitter, but either one of them, if both of those things materialise, then would be well worthy of winning it.
See, when Livingston last lost a game, which was that game against St Mirren all that time ago, I've got the league table up here. They're sitting in 10th place with 12 points from 15 games. They're now got 35 points from 24 games. You know, they were 5 points ahead of the relegation battle, and they'd played two games more than Hamilton. I think they probably had the worst record in the entire league at that stage, and he has turned them into a team I don't know if I'd be even saying that they're not the favourites to finish third, but I'm almost backing them more than Aberdeen at Hibs, the way those two teams are playing at the moment, to finish third. It's a totally remarkable, you know, place they find themselves in, Livingston, but it all comes down to the hard work that the players are putting in. I thought that was a good question that we got in, and I guess it'll wait to see how the rest of the season pans out. But we could be looking at two of the best achievements in, you know, decades in Scottish football if things did pan out that way. Right, we've got another couple of questions. We're not going to go through all the midweek stuff because we'll be here all day, but we got a couple of kind of comments on Hamilton. Aki's fan of the show, Mark Cherry, got in touch and said, or asking, has Aki's time finally come? Scott Burns, who I believe is a Hamilton Aki's fan, wants us to discuss how shite Aki's are. They are bottom of the league. I don't want to keep asking that question, but about whether they'll stay up or not, because I feel like it just gets the same response. But what I will say is that I thought they were really poor at Celtic Park on Wednesday. Celtic were poor as well and won so easily. And I just think Hamilton are not just the worst team in the league. I think they're one of the worst teams we've seen in a good few years in the top flight. I look at Motherwell, I don't think they're going to go down with Graham Alexander. They look to have, you know, turned things around a bit. I don't think St Johnstone are. Ross County, I've still got questions about, but I think St Mirren, you know, are doing okay. I think Killy will always pick up enough points to be clear. So you are running out of teams there that could finish bottom other than Hamilton, Fisher.
Yeah, I mean, I picked Hamilton at the start of the season, and I know it's a kind of running joke amongst kind of Scottish football fans about when their time will come, or, and the fact that they always hang on. I mean, they've got an absolutely huge game next on the 3rd of February at home to Ross County. So, I mean, I definitely think they need to try and win that, or else, to be honest, that I would probably start to feel confident in my prediction that they would go down, because if County win that, obviously, Hamilton will still get two games in hand over Ross County, but County then would move into the 23 points, which is just above Motherwell and just below St Johnstone. So they kind of pull clear a little bit into that kind of mix just above that's maybe fighting to stay away from the playoff. Yeah, I mean, I can't say I've seen an awful lot of Hamilton out with them, obviously playing Rangers, and when kind of teams like Hamilton play Rangers or Celtic, you know, you don't tend to take a lot from those games. But, I mean, we absolutely battered them at Ibrox, obviously, and we're pretty comfortable away from home as well. So, yeah, I'd probably agree with your assessment. They're probably one of the poorest top-flight teams that we've seen in a while. And it wouldn't surprise me. It kind of feels like there's an inevitability about it this season, whereas in seasons previous, you know, you could always maybe feel that there was just one or two teams that, whilst everybody maybe paid attention to Hamilton and the perceived lack of quality in their squad, you could always point to a couple of other teams and go, well, you know, they are struggling as well. But I just think it might be a season too far for Hamilton this year.
Right, before we move on to transfer stuff and a bit of COVID chat, guys, because we love a bit of COVID chat. Is there anything else for the midweek games, Craig, you want to pick out? I mean, St Mirren got quite a good result at Tannadice, a brilliant result.
Yeah, I think you would have to mention winning 5-1 at Tannadice, wouldn't you? I got to say, I fancied Dundee United to win that. Not as comfortably as St Mirren ended up doing so in the end, but just after watching St Mirren in the, obviously against Livingston last weekend, I just thought at full time you could kind of see how kind of gutted the team were, and they looked dejected, and obviously rightly so. They had a great chance to get to a cup final. Ultimately, Livy were just a better team on the day. And I was listening to Goodwin after the game, and obviously the managers are going to say kind of, well, we just need to try and get it out the system. But you could kind of almost feel like how difficult that was going to be. So you've got to say, fair play to go up to Tannadice. St Mirren are now sitting seventh, having played, I think they've played the least amount of games in the league, looking at it. And 5-1 up at Tannadice, you've got to tip the cap to them. So yeah, I would say that's probably performance of the midweek games goes to the Saints, I've got to say.
100%. Finally, St Johnstone, we probably shouldn't ignore them, given that they thumped Hibs 3-0 at Hampden on Saturday to reach the cup final. Callum Davidson, he's a bit of an unfashionable manager. I wouldn't say he's been a roaring success in Perth, but and they're certainly still in a battle to stay in the league. I don't think they've never really hit top form, maybe other than that stage they had probably about October when they won a few cup games. I think they put 7 past Brechin and then went on a wee run, but it's kind of been a bit stop-start for them this season, but somehow they've got a real opportunity to win a cup. Yes, they'll be coming up against the all-conquering Livingston, and they will be underdogs for that final, strangely enough, but it's a game that I think they've got a you know, decent chance of winning. They're not playing a Celtic or a Rangers, and St Johnstone, a team who recently won the Scottish Cup, let's say recently, about 5 or 6 years ago, have more chance for glory. So I thought we should give them a wee mention there. Right, we'll move on transfer stuff. Just a few bits and bobs that I want to talk about. Sam Foley looks like he's leaving St Mirren. Jim Goodwin's also looking to bring in a left back and a striker in the last few days before the start of February. Ross County have signed Jordan White from Motherwell. They've also signed Joe Hilton, who's a goalkeeper on loan from Blackburn Rovers. However, one player leaving Ross County, or it certainly looks like he's going to leave, is Ross Stewart. Sunderland, the team that are interested in him. The chat is Ross Stewart's out of contract in the summer, and I think John Hughes was reported as saying that he'd be looking for about £500,000, which seems a decent enough fee given that he'll be going for nothing in 5 or 6 months. But maybe that's what Ross County value, you know, from staying in the Premiership at. John Hughes, I think, hoping that Ross Stewart would maybe stay for the last few months. He'd maybe feel that he owes something to Ross County after, you know, coming through the youth academy there, or certainly, you know, getting his big breakthrough there. And he's a key player for them. I really like him, and I think that's a decent move for him going to Sunderland. What would you guys value Ross Stewart at right now, given that his contract's up in 6 months?
I mean, I'd probably say County looking for that amount is justified. I think we've spoken a lot in previous pods, and I think it's a topic among a lot of Scottish football fans, the fact that particularly when players seem to go to England, English clubs seem to think that they can pay minimal amounts for really important players at clubs. And obviously Ross Stewart is a very important player to Ross County. I would like to see them get that money, and I would like to see that happen more often throughout Scottish football, because it affects all clubs. And I mean, it's been a topic in our group chat this week, what with the Scott Wright transfer and stuff like that. But it happens to all Scottish clubs that teams, as I say, particularly from down south, seem to come in with offers that are kind of offensive, to be honest, for teams' key players. And as I say, he certainly is that to Ross County. So I would like to see Ross County kind of hold out and try and get the money that they feel that he's worth, because certainly he will be a big part of them staying in the top flight for the rest of the season, if he does stay, regardless of whether he runs down his contract and leaves in the summer.
Are we surprised that another Scottish team hasn't taken a look at Ross Stewart? I mean, I realise the money, £500,000, if that's what he goes for, may not be there for an Aberdeen or a Hearts or a Hibs. He's probably not at the level to play for a Celtic or a Rangers yet. Are you surprised maybe that no one else in Scotland has really been linked with him, Craig?
Yeah, definitely. I know we were speaking before we started recording, Hamish, both quite big fans of him. Certainly kind of physical attributes. He's big and strong, and he's quick as well. And he's obviously got a finish on him as well. So I'm surprised maybe if the kind of figure, as you mentioned there, that Ross County would be looking to get, is that a wee bit of a stretch, considering, I guess, the times that we're in just now for any of the teams that would maybe be taking a look at them, your kind of Aberdeens or Hibs. I agree with you. I wouldn't say he would be quite ready to even come in as a squad player to either Rangers or Celtic, but certainly could do a job, and he's no doubt got a good career ahead of him. I agree with you as well. I think Sunderland, if he was to end up there, I'm not actually sure what the situation with them just now in League One, if they're going to eventually get promoted this season back to the Championship. But regardless, they are a big football club, and that would be a chance for him. I think he would do really well, as I say. The attributes that he's got and the type of player that he is, you can see him doing well down in English leagues. So if he does go, then all the very best to him.
If you are wondering, listening to this, Sunderland are currently seventh in the English League One. They just are they ever going to get out of that league? They just seem permanently to be stuck in that place. I mean, Lincoln are top of League One at the moment in England, and teams like Doncaster are ahead of Sunderland, although you've got clubs like Charlton, Portsmouth and Hull are near the top of that division, Ipswich as well. So it's quite a strong league. But Sunderland just seems as if they're going to be, you know, permanently in that league. But I think it's a good level. I think he'd certainly flourish at English League One level. Right, a couple other wee bits. Jeremy Frimpong leaving Celtic. I'm a bit disappointed to see Frimpong going, because he was one of the ones, along with maybe Soro and Turnbull and Julian and McGregor, that you'd be looking to build a team around for the coming years and the big rebuild that's ahead of us in the summer. And I certainly felt that Jeremy Frimpong had a couple of years left at Celtic before he moved on. The chat is that it's, I think, 11.5 million. I don't know if that's euros or pounds, but I think there's a 30% sell-on fee or sell-on clause to go to Man City. I think we paid around about £1 million for him in the end. I think it was 350 up front and 650 in performance-based fees. So you're only going to look at about a profit of 6 or 7 million there, which in modern football is nothing at all. I mean, we spent $5 million on Barkas and the same on Ayeti in the summer. So disappointed that he's away. I don't blame him at all. I mean, if you've got a choice of working for one of the top teams in Germany, a brilliant coach, and developing, you know, your career at the same place the likes of Kai Havertz developed, in comparison to working with that idiot that's in charge at the moment, it really is a no-brainer. So I don't really have any, you know, Neil Lennon said he was a little bit let down by Jeremy Frimpong. Well, I think it's probably the other way around, that Frimpong feels a bit let down by his development. Lennon was cheeky enough to say that he's the club have developed Frimpong. The club have certainly given Frimpong a platform to play football, but could you really say Jeremy Frimpong has improved? Is he leaving a better player now than when he first broke onto the scene? I think he's regressed, actually, which is a lot down to the coaching there at the club. So, yeah, probably the last time we'll speak about Jeremy Frimpong on Burst Ball or Scottish football. But I think he'll go on to have a good career. I think he's got all the talents nowadays. I could just see him being part of that Bayer Leverkusen team. I could just picture him, you know, being one of those many English talents to flourish in Germany. I know he's technically Dutch, but you know, if you hear him speak, he's English. I wouldn't be surprised to see him going back to the Premier League in a few years for double, maybe even triple what we've sold him for. I think he's a real talent, but just another disappointing bit of news for Celtic. Rangers have signed Jack Simpson from Bournemouth, end of contract stuff. He'll join at the end of the season. Also talk about Namdi Offalbar, if that's how you pronounce it. Scott Wright has obviously signed as well. Chat that could be done in January. Fisher, what's the thoughts on that trio?
Well, I know Jack Simpson was somebody that I think was mentioned previously when Gerrard first came in that initial transfer market. I think he wanted to sign him, and then we couldn't sign him for whatever reason, and ended up with Joe Worrell, and I'll just leave that there.
There was chat about him going somewhere I saw the other day. Where's he off to?
There's been a couple of rumours that some team in the Premier League. To be fair, not to go off on a tangent, but I think Joe Worrell was quite kind of harshly treated by the Rangers support, but that is definitely an argument for another day. But yeah, I mean, I suppose it kind of asks the question of, because we've already got obviously Goldson, Hollander, Balogun, Katic who's injured, and George Edmondson. I suppose it kind of asks the question of which one of those is going to make way. I can't imagine that will be entertaining any offers for Goldson or Hollander. Balogun's contract's up in the summer, and Katic is just coming back from a year-long injury. So given his antics with Jordan Jones, you'd maybe imagine Edmondson would be away and Balogun would maybe leave because his contract's up in the summer. So interesting to see what happens with that one. The other Bournemouth player who you named there, I'm not going to try and pronounce it because I'll make an arse of it. Can't say I know too much about him, but I think the one thing with these transfers, and it's the same when you see some of the reactions to us signing Scott Wright as well, I think Gerard and the recruitment team, Ross Wilson and so on, have earned the right from the support to really wait and see, particularly given the success of the transfers this season, obviously in terms of refitting and so on. So yeah, it's exciting, and it's good to see that the club's obviously not resting on our laurels, so to speak, and we're already that's a cliche klaxon there, and we're already kind of planning ahead for next season, because I think it'd be very easy for the club to go, right, we've won the league this season, you know, that's great, and kind of revel in that, whereas we seem to be looking to improve already, which is good. So yeah, exciting times to be a Rangers fan, as I'm sure Craig will agree.
Very little risk attached with them as well, Craig, these signings, because if they work out, great, but if they don't, you've not paid anything for them. And I mean, they won't be in big wages either.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Gerard mentioned himself when he was talking about the signings that himself and Ross Wilson kind of look at it very much kind of building for the future. And I know we spoke about the Scott Wright signing being very low risk, and I think the two boys coming in from Bournemouth follow the same that same kind of pattern as well. So yeah, it's just to kind of echo what Fisher said, it's good to see us kind of looking ahead. I can't say I know too much about the two boys from Bournemouth at all. judging, you always can have a look on social media, don't you, see what the Bournemouth fans have been saying. And on the whole, I think they're two decent young players. So yeah, I think again, as Fisher said, the recruitment so far has earned them the kind of benefit of the doubt to trust the from the fans, the gain the kind of fans' trust, and that these will be some more good signings for us.
Right, so that was a couple of transfers that have been completed. One that doesn't look like it is going to be completed, and I'm about to butcher another name here, not the player this time, but the club. It's Stevie Malin's move to Turkish side Yeni Malatyaspor is off. That's a strange one, isn't it, like that in the first place. Stevie Malin, I heard St Mirren were in for him, and that kind of seemed to make a lot more sense than going away to Turkey. Obviously, the deal's fallen through anyway. But it got me thinking, what crazy deals can we remember between the three of us over, you know, our time watching Scottish football? Obviously, the minute we're talking about Turkish football, I was, you know, my mind was drawn to that weird period we went through where some of the best players in Scotland just seemed to be all going off to play for Bursaspor and teams like that. That was a strange time. Another one was, remember Michael Higden when he moved from Motherwell to NEC Nijmegen? That one always struck me as strange. And if we're kind of broadening her horizons and we want to talk about a player who played in Scotland, Julian Faubert, he's always the most crazy one when he went from West Ham, I think it was, to Real Madrid, and then subsequently ended up at Kilmarnock a few years back. Any other ones that spring to your mind, guys?
You had Billy Mehmet go, as we're on the topic of Turkey. He went from St Mirren to Ajax. I'm not even going to just Google Billy Mehmet and look at the team he went to from St Mirren. I cannot pronounce that. That just looks like a word jumble to me. But then after that team, he went to Salmonspor in Turkey and then went to Australia and stuff like that. So that was a bit of a weird one. I'm trying to kind of rack my brains because I must be, I mean, Rangers in the third division signing Argirio for Greece and Kribari from Brazil and stuff like that. That was a bit, it probably says more about Rangers than it does the transfers at that time, to be honest. But
do you remember Killian or Cillian, however you say it, Sheridan? He ended up going to, where was he?
CSK Sofia.
And then he went on a wee run of just being all over the world, kind of thing. I always remember a lot going back a wee bit now, but in terms of players coming to Scotland, remember Ravenelli at Dundee? I'm kind of showing my age a wee bit here, but I kind of, like, when I was a lot younger, I remember him being at Juventus, and obviously Ravenelli was like a legend in Italian football, and then all of a sudden he's playing for Dundee, and I think Dundee ended up in some serious financial troubles after paying the wages. I like guys like him and Caniggia, and the Cavallero, the other one they had as well.
Oh, what a player, Cavallero. He loved a free kick, didn't he?
Oh, brilliant player. And remember Dundee going off on a total tangent here, but remember they had that kind of many Argentinian players that their away trip one year was just basically an Argentina top.
Yeah, like it was like the kind of sky blue, obviously sky blue and white.
Kind of. It was like stripes, wasn't it? Trying to think of any other. I suppose like Chris Boyd ending up at Portland Timbers, remember, and doing his mattress advert.
I've got one for you. Takas Fisas, right after winning Euro 2004, rocking up at Hearts.
Right enough.
That was always strange. Remember that the players all went over to Russia as well? You had like Gary O'Connor playing in Russia, yeah. Lokomotiv Moscow, and it obviously McGeady went over as well. I think there was another player went over to Russia as well. That's kind of what I'm hitting at, these weird ones that you just never expected to happen.
You had Ziggy Gordon going to Poland as well, mind, from Partick Thistle, and then he came back and played for Hamilton, because that came to my mind actually, because I was, and this probably is indicative of how much there's absolutely nothing else to do, I was watching the Australian A-League on a Saturday morning at like 8 o'clock in the morning, and he popped up playing for Western Sydney Wanderers because it was Graham Doran's first game for them. And I was like, oh, this is Ziggy Gordon. And then that's just popped into my head there. I went and played in Poland for like 2 years or something like that. I think he's, I'm sure I heard it at the radio at the time, he has some sort of Polish heritage or is of Polish descent or something like that. So yeah, that maybe makes a wee bit more sense.
Andy Halliday going to Kavala, whatever you call them, on loan as well, surely.
I could only play like the Europa League in the Cup or something like that, he said.
That was a mad signing.
That's basically because Pedro Caixinha didn't like him. So just pretty much sent him as far away as he wanted to.
some crazy tales from yesteryear. I don't think we're going to see anything quite as dramatic as that over the last few days. It's been quite a quiet window in general, I think. Probably a lot to do with the fact there's not much money going around. Probably COVID, meaning that I'm assuming things like scouting has been less obvious, much harder logistically to sign players, I'm assuming. We're seeing a lot of pre-contract deals, but not a lot of actual transfers been done this month, certainly not a lot of international transfers. But we'll leave the transfer chat there. We'll move on to, as I said earlier, the stuff we all love to chat about, COVID, just briefly to finish the podcast. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Aberdeen set to apply for a loan from the government. This is down to real fears that they've got that they won't have spectators back at Pittodrie next season, basically, certainly the start of next season. It's obviously really difficult to predict, you know, a week in advance, never mind 2 or 3 months in advance, but it really doesn't look promising at the moment when you look at the case numbers. Do we think next season could be another washout in terms of fans being at grounds, or do either of you want to put a positive spin on this story?
Well, I was actually thinking about this earlier when I should have been working. I just started daydreaming and I was like, I wonder when we'll get fans in. To be honest, just the way you hear about, especially in the hospitality sector, and when it may open up again, you know, I doubt we will see fans back at football if, for example, you kind of go to the pub and mix and stuff like that. So I don't know. You would hope that with the kind of acceleration in the vaccine rollout and stuff like that, that maybe for the start of next season there might be numbers in some sense. But I think, unfortunately, from my point of view only, I just think it might be the end of the year, which is absolutely depressing and would scunner you, but that's what we've come to expect, isn't it?
The thing I've got a bit of a trouble with is, like, why would... I feel like when we're going into the summer months, if it doesn't happen in the summer, I feel like it's going to be another year again. There's talk, I think, that they can hopefully vaccinate, I think, everyone over 50 by like the end of April or whatever it is. But from what I understand, even when vaccinations have been dished out to the majority, social distancing is still going to be a thing. And we're certainly not going to see full stadia for a long time now. Without being cheeky, I realise full stadia in Scotland only really applies to a few select teams. The vast majority do have a lot of empty seats at their ground, so it's maybe not as much of a problem as we make out for the vast majority. And I suppose we'd be happy even to get, you know, a third of grounds full. I mean, a third of a ground would be amazing right now when you look at where we're at. But even when people are vaccinated, it sounds like we're still going to have real troubles with social distancing and the need to keep social distancing. But surely things reach a point, Craig, where surely we reach a point where we have to go, you know, we're getting on with our lives here. I realise that's a much bigger topic than simply going to football, and it applies to so many more things. But surely, surely we reach a point here where we go, you know, we can't go another year of this.
Yeah, that's my kind of thought. Chain of thought about the whole situation is along that lines. I mean, speaking to one of my pals who he works in kind of health policy at the Scottish Government, and without kind of, not that I'm in the know at all, but just kind of asking him for some clarity on this whole situation. What if they get to the stage where the kind of 50s and over and all the vulnerable groups have been vaccinated by kind of April, May time, then basically what we're saying is by then it will, we won't be hearing about as many numbers in intensive care units and the deaths, obviously, not completely gone, but certainly not at the rates that we're seeing just now. So I guess that is when the decision comes round, is there just a kind of acceptance of the risk of it? The virus is still there, but it's not obviously the people, the vulnerable people are vaccinated against it. So yeah, I know that I'm not really answering it at all here. I guess that no one really can at the minute, but you would hope that, as you say, we do kind of get to the point where it's like, right, we need to try and get on with our lives a little bit, because I know there's a lot of support in place just now. I know you mentioned about Aberdeen. I don't think they'll be the only team that are maybe applying for support of this kind, and especially if there's no fans, if we're talking about getting to the end of the year without being able to get fans back into grounds, and the revenue streams that that gives clubs, then, as I say, I don't think Aberdeen would be the only team that are starting to look for some real critical help. So yes, but to put a positive spin on it, I do think that by the start of next season, we'll start to see fans back in grounds. I think we're relying on the vaccine programme going well, so we've just got to, without sounding too cliche, we've got to think positive and hope that it does go well, and that we can, as we say, start to get back to our what used to be normal life before all this. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, it certainly feels like we're heading for a social ending to this pandemic. I think people are just getting sick, tired, fed up. Obviously, at the moment, when you see, you know, 13, 14, 1500 people dying a day, I'm not saying for 1 minute, open the pubs, open the football stadia. The point I'm making is that in the summer, if we can get, you know, the vast majority vaccinated and the case numbers come down, I really think at that stage, I just think at that stage we have to be getting fans back into grounds, and none of this 300 crap. It needs to be, we need to get on with our lives at some stage. But I'll reiterate the point that I'm not saying at this stage, because it's obviously the numbers are pretty horrendous at the moment, and you know, we are in a real lockdown. You get anything else to add, Fisher?
No, just obviously love coming on the pod and cheering myself up with lots of positive COVID talk, man. It's brilliant.
We've got one more bit for you. It's the question we got in from Dylan McDonald of the Talking Lower League podcast. And funnily enough, he's talking about the lower leagues. He's asking us for any thoughts on the potential return of League One and League Two. Despite a plan being put forward by all 20 clubs, there seems to be a hold up in any type of update on it from the governing bodies. I must admit, I've kind of been a bit ignorant to this story, and there's just been so much else going on that I've not really seen it, although I do believe that you know, the resolution regarding the lower leagues being able to return is kind of a bit on hold at the moment. Ian Maxwell obviously coming under a bit of pressure to do that. I think they're out of action until at least the end of January. I think there's maybe a review at the start of February. I'd be surprised if the teams were going again for the start of February. But I think we all hope that lower league football can get back, because, you know, it's these players' livelihood. It's so many fans of teams in the lower leagues that aren't getting to see their team playing at the moment that will be having an effect on them as well. Personally, I wish Celtic were a lower league team at the moment so I didn't have to watch that dross, but that's a separate point. On that topic, the final question we're going to touch on, Lard O'Connor getting in touch asking, when and how do you think Lennon will go? It's a good question, that. I think he'll be here to the end of the season.
Yeah.
I think that's what we'll get for Celtic. Just beggar's belief, to be honest. But I think he'll go, hopefully, at the end of the season. How will he go? Well, I don't really know. Firing squad? I don't know.
I I'll probably agree with you. I kind of made the point in there. Not by, can I just say, I don't agree with firing squad before we get accused then, but I put the kind of point in the chat about, I think his departure will be announced when there's nothing left to play for, and that kind of makes absolute, it probably doesn't make much sense, but I just think Celtic are just looking to try and ride this out into the end of the season, so that, well, potentially because they don't know who they're going to appoint, but so that if they did, the person that may come in the summer isn't tarnished by any of this and the fallout, the further fallout rather, that will probably happen as we get nearer to the end of the season.
Right, we'll call it there, lads. I've enjoyed this podcast. Thanks very much for your time. You can both get back to work and I'll do the same. Thanks everyone for listening to this. Remember, we are on Twitter at Burstball Podcast. We don't really tweet anymore. That's something we're going to have to address, but we'll deal with that at some stage. Yeah, speak to you soon.